So what has the last year been like for you, being a PGA Tour winner, being the Quicken Loans National Champion, and what does this week mean to you to be the defending champion?
I think the biggest thing is just knowing that I don't have to press this year. You know, when things might, you know, get going a little bit south, you know, might miss a few cuts in a row, you don't have to press and worry about, you know, trying to keep your card for the next year. Just, you know, you can go out and kind of freewheel it and try and play good golf and have some good finishes, you know. And I've been pretty inconsistent this year, but we've had 5 top 25s and 4 top 20s. So when we make the weekend, it's been just fine, but we haven't made that many weekends. But, no, it's nice to come back to the D.C. area here and defend for the Quicken Loans this year. You know, we had a lot of great experiences last
year. What's it like to defend at a course that's a completely opposite venue in a lot of ways from RTJ last year, a little tighter in spots, a little bit more of a classic golf course in Congressional? What's the difference between the biggest glaring difference between the two?
Well, the biggest difference between the two, I would say, is you know, getting the ball and play off the tee. I think RTJ, the fairways were a little bit more wide last year, and, you know, the rough wasn't as penal. You come over here to Congressional and you miss the fairway on these long par fours, and it's hard to get the ball, you know, not just on the green, but, you know, just around the green where you can get it up and down. You know, the green surroundings here at Congressional might be a little bit tougher to get the ball up and down than they were at RTJ. The green complexes at RTJ might have been a little bit tougher, but, you know, there's a lot of similarities. But Congressional is a tougher golf course for me of the two, and it's going to take a lot of really stellar golf to have a chance on Sunday afternoon.
You played great at Colonial, T17, which is the same kind of ball strikers golf course. You got to be solid from tee to green, and then you got to make the putt. But you got to be solid from tee to green. So is there something you can draw from that good finish for this week?
Yeah, you know, we made a bunch of birdies at Colonial. I think we had 21 birdies and an eagle.
We were only able
to post 5 under. So just making a lot of birdies, you know, getting it on the green, you know, within 15, 20 feet and rolling a bunch of putts in. I mean, if we can, first and foremost for me here is finding the fairways and then, you know, just let the irons do what they can to get in there to birdie range. And, you know, been a pretty solid putter now for about the last 2 years on tour. And we're going to make our fair share. So the key for me this week will be getting the ball into play and then getting it to where I can get the birdie putts to drop.
What was the week off like for you last week? Did you watch the Open at all? And what did you get ready for this week?
I watched just a little bit of it. You know, I took, after 3 weeks on the road, I took the first half of the week off from golf and just did some light workouts in the weight room, just doing some running and then some upper body stuff and some core stuff. But I didn't work on a whole lot with the golf game, just a little bit of short game work and just trying to maintain the tempo that I work with, you know, when I'm on the road. So, you know, I don't usually work with a lot when I'm at home, but I did do some extra short game work this time.
That's the obvious question. Do you have a reaction to what happened to Dustin? Have you ever been in a situation where you've had a potential ruling looming over you, and how did you react to it if that was the case?
No, I you know, well, actually, you know, one time I did that I didn't know about until the round was over. Was when I played my first U.S. Ham up at Hazeltine. We were playing the Chaska Town course, and one of the guys didn't like a drop that I had made after I hit it in the hazard on 15, and I didn't find out about it until after I'd signed my scorecard, and then we had to talk about it and then go back out and recreate the shot. And, you know, long story short, I ended up not getting penalized and missing the match play by one shot anyway. But, it's not fun when something awkward happens like that. I mean, I've had the ball move on me a couple times, and it catches you off guard because it's something that doesn't happen. And, you know, when it does, you know, it's just, and it scares you a little bit. You got to, you know, go through the proper procedures. You know, did I make it move? Did it move by itself? Am I going to be penalized? You know, call my, playing partners in. This is what happened. What do you guys think? This is what I think. And then, you know, you got to go through it the right way. And, you know, to have it, you know, happen and then not have a decision made and be told that a decision be made after the round, you know, during the final round of the U.S. Open is not what you want hanging over your head. But I think Dustin did a great job, and he definitely closed the door, and he deserved to win that thing on Sunday.
Is the follow-up question then, I guess, is obviously the USGA kind of somewhat questioned Dustin's integrity in saying that he caused the ball to move, even Dustin didn't think that was the case. having a playing partner say something similar to you, that you didn't follow the letter of the law. How did you take that, and then what was kind of your emotional reaction to that, knowing that someone's questioning your integrity?
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, it really is. I mean, obviously, you know, the game is built on integrity and honesty, and you do your best to follow the rules. As you know, obviously, we don't know all the rules, or we can remember all the rules every day. But, you do your very best to not to have anything like that happen. Having seen it on replay, to me, in Dustin's case, it didn't look like he caused it to move. He hadn't even grounded his putter and technically addressed it, so I don't think there was any issues. But it's just something really weird that happened. Hopefully everybody can learn from it and move on.
All right, let's get to a happier subject. You're wearing the Driver versus Driver logo this week with Wilson, and you're going to promote the forthcoming show and the contest to get a new driver potentially out of this contest. Can you talk about your involvement in it so far and what you're hoping to get out of the competition as a player who might actually see this equipment someday?
Yeah, I mean, my involvement has been very minimal. I haven't been really involved in any part of the process. But it will be interesting to see what comes of it, what kind of it gets brought, and how good it is, and then it'll be fun to test it out and see what we can do with it. I think it'll be a lot of fun. I think everybody's going to learn something through the process, and we'll just have to see what's produced.
Would you consider yourself a gearhead, or how do you approach your bag, and how often do you make changes to it? And are you someone who just kind of relies on feel, or you kind of rely on TrackMan a little bit, or somewhere in between?
Nope, I am 100% a feel player. If it looks good and it feels good, I'll make it work. I don't know what the numbers mean by any means. I'm not a gearhead at all. I am on the opposite end of the spectrum of some of the guys that are coming out on tour right now. And if it looks like I said, if it looks right and it feels good, then I'm going to make it work.
And when you're making changes into your bag, how often do you think about making those changes, or does kind of Wilson come to you and say, hey, we've got this new piece of equipment, Troy, we'd love to see if you could put it in your bag? How does that seeding process work for you?
Well, they'll ask me from time to time to demo something and to see how I like it, see how it performs and reacts. But, if there's something that I think isn't quite right in my bag, I'll ask questions or see if we can do something different. But for the most part, I really like the setup that I have and the clubs that are in the bag. And, we work together to make sure that everything is spec'd out to where it needs to be, and, proper lengths and proper lofts and lies. And then we have to just go and make it work. I don't ever blame the equipment for poor shots. It's always user error. And, so I just want to make sure that everything is right so that I know that it's my fault and not the equipment's fault.
For an amateur that is kind of trying to figure out the best equipment for them, what is your advice to them, being a field player that probably prefers just to hit it and see how it feels and looks, as opposed to someone who may not necessarily have the best idea or the best feel for that matter of what's going to work for them?
Yeah, I think, what's becoming popular these days is to go to your local, like Golf Galaxy or something like that, and get on the simulator with somebody and see what kind of the type of shots you hit, where your misses are, and see if you do need to, adjust your loft and lies. Maybe you need a little flatter setup. Maybe you need a little bit more upright, like myself. Maybe your clubs are too short. Maybe they're too long. Standard isn't always best for everybody. So the best thing I would say is, go into your local, Wide World of Golf or Golf Galaxy or whatever, Dick's, whatever's around, and just go and ask questions. Maybe just fiddle around with it a little bit, hit some shots, and just see what happens.
Do you think that an amateur can kind of, especially somebody who's maybe a 20, 25 handicap, can get too enamored with all of the details of making golf clubs these days? Because there are so many options out there for any player that wants to spec out their equipment how they want. Are there certain pieces of the puzzle they should focus on more than others?
I would say, for a 20, 25 handicap, is the thing you want to focus most on, and I would say it for any handicap is short game. It's not so much the long game at that point. The short game is going to help you 5-6 shots around if you can get it a little bit more dialed in. You start there and then you work your way backwards, you know, to your longer shots to dial those in. But, you know, my best advice is always work on the short game, 50 yards in, 100 yards in, get that dialed in, get your shots around the green dialed in and save more strokes in. And as your handicap comes down and you get better around the greens with your feel, then you start moving backwards to find out, you know, if your clubs are the right fit for you or not, and then you go from there.
What is the question you get most often from your pro-am players, either about yourself, about their game? What's the thing that you get asked most on a Wednesday?
I usually didn't have anything to do with golf. You know, I let my my amp partners know right away on the first tee box that we're going to have fun. We're not going to win. You need to accept that right now. We're going to go out here and have a good time, and we'll just see what happens. And, you know, as a result, you know, we talk, you know, more about, you know, what everybody does for a living, and we get some good banter going, and it's not about the technicalities of golf. So, I just let them know right away that we're here to have fun. Let's enjoy the day, and we'll just see what happens after that.
And what made you decide to start doing that? Because I imagine that at somewhere along the process, you decided you kind of have to put this out there on the first tee.
Yeah, you know, I had a group or two when I first started, you know, 6-7 years ago, you know, that the first thing they said to me when they walked on the tee was, we're really going to try and win this thing today, and we need you to play really well. And immediately when you do that, the pressure goes on everybody. And, you know, it was not a fun day at all. So I just let everybody know from now on that we're not going to win. If we have a lot of fun and perhaps we make a lot of putts, you know, I have had pro-am teams that have won, but it takes something special for 18 holes, and it usually doesn't happen. So what I found, you know, if the pressure's off on the first tee, you can make the guys as least nervous as you can, then they're going to have a lot more fun and they're going to play a lot better. So I just let them know right away, we're not going to win. Let's have fun and enjoy the day.
And is that your approach to your 72-hole events? That not that we're not going to win, but to think about fun and let's see what happens and just kind of let things play out, see where they shake up until you get to a final day where maybe you can make a great finish or a good charge sort of win.
Yeah, I try to ease my way into rounds. Sometimes it's not always great, but, you know, just try and get the feel right away. You know, I've learned to be real patient, not let the bad shots get to me. Because I have a new motto, I don't hit bad shots anymore. I just hit the right shot to the wrong place. And it kind of gets you in the frame of mind to go and do your best on the next one. And it gets your mind off hitting, you know, a poor shot, and you just move on.
And how long did it take you to get to that place? As a player, did it take going through high school and collegiate golf to get to that point, or kind of what point did you pick up on the philosophy that works for you out here?
Probably just the last couple of years, as far as not letting the bad shots get to me. I mean, even in college when I was winning a bunch of tournaments, you know, I would let bad shots not necessarily get to me, but I'd get frustrated with it, but I'd use it in a positive way and channel it into doing well on the next hole. But that's still adds a lot of stress, and, you know, we just try to get that out of there. So it's more just stress-free, take things as they come, and try to make a bunch of birdies.
Is there any one player out there right now that you prefer to play your practice rounds with, or you've learned the most from, or someone that mentors you that's picked up your game the last couple of years?
No, I actually like to play by myself in practice rounds, mm-hmm. just because when I play with others, it feels like I start going faster and my tempo gets quick, and it kind of carries throughout the week. So if I can play by myself, I keep the same tempo and the same rhythm that I want during the tournament, and I've been a lot more successful that way.
And did that kind of take the trial and error approach, figure, hey, when I just happen to go up by myself, this seems to go better for the rest of the way?
Yep, that's exactly right. I noticed it about 2 years ago and been doing it ever since.
Is that kind of the nature of figuring out how to, in general, succeed on tour, trial and error, that most guys don't come out there and have it where they want it right away?
Yeah, I mean, you got to figure out. I mean, it's different out here than anything else you've played growing up. We play different courses against a lot better players, and you just have to figure out what's best for you, and it takes a little while to do that.